Hey everybody, I'm Scott. It's fundraising time again at antiwar.com. We need your help, and here's how you can help. Stop by antiwar.com/donate or call Angela Keaton, our development director, at 323-512-7095. That's 323-512-7095, or you can shoot her an email over to akeaton@antiwar.com.
Thank you very much for your support.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. Our next guest on the show is Brittany Schaefer. Imagine Butler Schaefer having a brilliant daughter. I guess that kind of makes sense, huh? She's a writer and a filmmaker and author of the book Why Mommy Loves the State. And you can find at least some articles at lourockwell.com. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm sorry. I should have Googled around more. Do you have a website of your own?
I do, actually. It's www.brettigne.com. The only hard part of that is my name, which is B-R-E-T-I-G-N-E.
Okay. Well, and we'll have a link to it in the archive of this on antiwar.com/radio later on.
Okay, great.
For everybody to find, too. And, you know, this is really something else. This is a really good article. Saving Women and Preventing Genocide, The Real Reasons We're in Afghanistan Now. I like the title. It starts out good right there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I guess obviously what brought this up is the Time magazine cover of the young girl with the mutilated face.
Yep.
And what happens when we leave. So, well, what's your take?
Well, I mean, that piece, and it wasn't just that one. It was also, you know, the one in the Wall Street Journal, you know, comparing a U.S. pullout from Afghanistan to, you know, the rise of the Khmer Rouge and the killing fields. And,
yeah.
I mean, and literally, I'm not exaggerating that at all. And it just struck me, you know, the sort of insanity of, you know, failing to recognize, A, that, you know, in the case of Cambodia, that happened because of the U.S. presence. I mean, that the Khmer Rouge only rose to power because the U.S. had been bombing, you know, these villages indiscriminately and just killing thousands and thousands of Cambodians. They would not, you know, most experts, most people who know a lot more about this than I do, say that just they wouldn't have run to the Khmer Rouge had it not been for that. You know, they were being decimated. They were terrified. So they ran to the arms of this, you know, crazy communist faction, which then rose to power and killed everybody.
Yeah. Well, hold it right there. Slow down a little bit. We got a little bit of time.
Okay.
I think that's a very important point, and I think you're absolutely right as far as my best understanding of what happened there. And you linked to John Pilger in your article.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, where I first learned that was watching Swimming to Cambodia with the guy that played the ambassador in the movie of the Killing Fields. And he gave this great explanation about how the Khmer Rouge were a bunch of bark-eating crazies in the jungle that nobody paid any attention to until, and they were the enemies of the Vietnamese, North-South communist or otherwise. And then they saw themselves being bombed to smithereens by the same planes that were bombing Vietnam all the time. And then they made friends with the VC, and they got AK-47s and training, and then Pol Pot, of course, came back from France, took over the thing, and marched on Phnom Penh. But it was absolutely made in America. The whole thing. It was a, in fact, you could argue that that's the kind of danger we're messing with in Pakistan right now in the Vietnam analogy. We keep bombing this friendly country next door that allows us to bomb them.
Right.
And we end up creating a situation where you could have the crazies take power instead of the so-called moderates, the American puppets.
Right. Well, and in a sense, that's kind of already happened. I mean, you know, by all reports, the Taliban is just getting stronger the longer we're there. And in fact, if you know, I mentioned at the end of my article, you know, what Afghanistan used to be like before the Soviet invasion, which, you know, also was sort of our, you know, we kind of instigated that. You know, before all that happened, you look at these pictures of, you know, men and women going to school together, women doctors, you know, people wearing very much Western clothing. You know, it looks like a nice place to be. These are photos of Kabul, and it looks like, you know, this nice, civilized place. And to go from that, it's just, it's shocking. I mean, to imagine going from that level of living to where they are now. I mean, something changed. This is not something that's inherent in the Afghan people or the Afghan culture. Something changed. And, you know, we were the ones who supported the Islamic fundamentalists early on. And what's happened now is people are turning to them because they're promising to fight us. And, I think it's very similar to the Cambodia situation in that, you've got this radical, crazy group of people who are, hurting the Afghan people and hurting women in particular. Yet people are turning to them and giving them more support because at least they promise to fight the people who are bombing them and killing them.
Well, and, rather than just leave that the way you said, I'll refer people again to this great article at LouRockwell.com, Saving Women and Preventing Genocide, where you link to two very powerful pieces of evidence there, that an Amnesty International report and a Human Rights Watch report. Mm-hmm. That says that women's rights have been getting worse. Hey, you start the thing pointing out that this girl on the front of Time magazine, she was butchered 8 years into the American occupation.
Right.
We're not preventing that at all. But,
right.
but you actually cite these studies where they really looked into this. Things are getting worse and worse for real for women there. We're not saving them at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And just as a caveat to that, it is, it's difficult to get exact numbers. Everybody who writes about this says, okay, there was a time when, they weren't even collecting numbers on this, so they don't even know what, how many, rapes, how many forced marriages, how many, attacks on women there were, in the early years. But it's clear that the trend is going upwards. It's clear that violence against women is increasing. It's getting worse. And when you talk to people on the ground there, there's a documentary I linked to too, which is really worth watching. It's from an anti-war organization, so it's got its own slant too, but it talks with people who I think are pretty credible. I mean, you've got, someone from the Afghan Women's Mission, someone from the Afghan Women's Network, the Global Fund for Women, the Afghan correspondent for the Wall Street Journal, all speaking about their experiences, being on the ground, being close to this, and they're all saying, it was bad before, it was awful, but it's only gotten worse. I mean, partly because, they're now, as the journal correspondent put it, they're still confined to their houses. They're still subject to violence. They're still kept away from education. But now they're also living in a war zone. And as one of the commentators also puts it, because of the restrictions on women's activities, because of their prohibitions on working, and that kind of thing, even though it's allowed by law, women get death threats for having jobs. Because of all of that, if their husband gets killed in combat or if he's, killed by a bomb that happens to hit their house, she's really in trouble. The whole family's really in trouble because, she's risking her life to go out and try to work. Oftentimes all that's available to them is prostitution. And, it's just not good. I mean, it seems like an obvious point to make, but being in a war zone doesn't make things better. And in fact, the ills that they're claiming to address, have just gotten worse.
Well, I think it's funny, just as a side note here, wouldn't it be cool if there was some kind of rule that the writers for the Wall Street Journal editorial page had to actually read the reporting from the other part of the newspaper? Because Anand Gopal, he's a real good reporter. I've talked to him on the show a couple of times. I've read a lot of his articles, and that's real journalism. Anand Gopal, that's who you're referring to there.
Yep.
And then the editorial page is like, these people live on the dark side of the moon somewhere or something. I don't know.
Well, that's funny because I actually used to work for the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah.
So what is it? Is everybody, because it's not acid? So because I know how acid works. Is it PCP or is it barbiturates? What is the matter with these people?
I was in the Hong Kong bureau and it was a very different scene there. I worked with some wonderful people there. Very small office, and we just I was focused on Asia issues. I wasn't and I left soon before 9/11, so I didn't have to deal with that kind of thing, but. Yeah, there's a huge divide between editorial and news side, and I mean, in in Hong Kong it wasn't so bad, but in the States, it's like outright hostility. They're not friends. But yeah, it's a good point. I mean, he actually knew what was going on the ground there, and you know, yet you've got this editorial piece coming out saying, we've got to stay, or they're all doomed.
Well, you know, I read about these soldiers and all the PTSD and the flashbacks, the slideshow in their head that they can't turn off and all that. And there's one of mine that I just got from watching it on the computer. And that's from, it's the very end section of Rethink Afghanistan by Robert Greenwald. Which everybody can watch it on Google Video or YouTube. And it's the women in the refugee camp praying for God to come and kill them. Because they just can't stand to live like this anymore. That's the reality of what America is doing to Afghanistan. I beg people to go watch that. And hang tight. We'll be right back with Brittany Schaefer after this.
Shop at Amazon.LRN.FM and a portion of Amazon's profits benefit the Liberty Radio Network. Amazon.LRN.FM.
All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton, and I'm talking with Brittany Schaefer. She writes for LouRockwell.com. She's got her own website, and you'll just have to Google it, because you're not going to memorize the way I spell her name out loud for you anyway. But Google will correct your spelling. It's a magic thing, that Google. All right, so here's the thing. I gotta try to, you know, challenge you and play devil's advocate and whatever. Obviously, I don't even believe there should be a Washington, D.C. at all, so there's no military to do anything. But
Right. That's
the premise I'm coming from. I know you're an individualist from reading your Facebook posts and so forth, and reading some of these articles, and, you know, seems likely, since you're Butler Schaefer's daughter and everything. But so how do individualism and feminism and your own principles of liberty coincide with, you know, I mean, I guess we kind of already did explain that things are getting worse there or whatever, but then again, turning these women over to the tender mercies of the Taliban from here on out could be a really brutal thing. In fact, it's in the news, assuming it's true at all, I don't know, but they're saying, apparently with multiple sources, that the Taliban stoned a couple to death.
Yep, I saw that.
Just yesterday.
Yeah.
That, you know, these guys are coming back to power, and that's who they are. They'd throw an adulterous woman or one accused of being adulterous down a well if they feel like it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. It's a fair question.
Sorry I didn't phrase it in the form of a question. It would have been better probably if I had.
Yeah. I mean, it's clear what you're getting at. You know, I think the first thing to look at is what the U.S. government is doing now. You know, is it actually helping? Is it making it worse? It's pretty clear to me that it's making it worse. So at the very least, you stop doing the thing that's making things worse. I mean, and that's the thing that kind of drives me crazy about this country. I don't know if it's just Americans, maybe it's human nature, but there's this sort of tendency to want to do something. You know, you have to do something. And if the person telling you that what you're doing is causing the problem or is it making it worse, you know, you then turn to them and say, well, what would you do? And if they can't come up with an answer, you say, well, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. And, you know, it's this craziness of insisting on doing the thing that's making things worse just because you have to do something. So I would say the first part of the answer is stop doing the thing that's making things worse. Stop doing the thing that's strengthening the Taliban, that's, you know, that's driving people to support them as the lesser of two evils. At least do that. At least get out. But then, you know, let's say we do that and the Taliban's already strong. Doesn't matter whose fault it is. They're there. They're strong. They're killing people. They're, you know, doing horrible things. What do you do? You know, I don't have an easy answer for that. I don't know what the solution is. You know, my kind of, and I'm with you. You know, I don't think the U.S. government should exist anyway. I don't think the military should exist anyway. But it does. And, you know, is there something positive that it could do to help make, you know, to at least ameliorate some of the harm that it's caused? You know, my crazy, whacked out fantasy is, declare amnesty for Afghan women. Create an underground railway for women to come to this country. And, you know, people who object that, well, you know, then the U.S. taxpayers are going to have to, you know, subsidize them or, you know, they're going to use all our public service. You know what? They're taking your money anyway. The war is taking all your resources anyway. So I'm not saying I would support that. I have a lot of problems with that. But if you're looking for, you know, a positive alternative for the and you know, my other problem with that would be, you know, with the government running it, they're probably going to end up achieving the opposite of what it's intended to do anyway. But, you know, that would be something where, God, you know, at least you're doing something genuinely to try and help these people, as opposed to, you know, going in and, you know, blowing people up, you know, shooting people from the sky and having that masquerade as a humanitarian effort, because it's not. So I guess the answer is I don't really have an answer. I don't have a solution, but my sort of larger point is the U.S. government to a great extent created this problem. They really set the stage for the Taliban to become as strong as it has. And the bigger issue that I see here, not to discount, you know, the plight of women in Afghanistan right now, but the bigger issue is let's stop doing this. Let's not do this in the future. Let's not keep doing this. You know, let's not go to Iran and do this now. Let's not, you know, find out. Let's not think that this is a solution, because it's not. This makes things worse.
Well, you know, one of the things that it seems it's just a tragedy or something, but I, you know, one of the realities that it may have been a non-Gopal actually where I read this, but maybe not. But anyway, it was that, you know, the black turban signifies that I can prove I'm a descendant of Muhammad, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really part of the base. Of course, there's the very conservative modesty issue and whatever, but it's also the oppression of women is a matter of preserving and being able to claim 100%, I know for a fact whose son this is. And
mm-hmm.
that's why we
mm-hmm.
can pass on the black turban. And this is at least in Pashtun society and maybe more widespread than that. It's just, you know, it's the way that they make sure that their family tree is what they say it is. And it doesn't sound like the kind of thing that 100 years worth of occupation or 1,000 years
mm-hmm.
worth of Western literature is ever going to overcome, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's part of the thing, you know, the West went in there and, you know, they created all these new laws with the U.S. occupation. There are all these new laws in support of women's rights. And, you know, all the sort of proponents of our occupation, you know, in defense of women will cite these laws and say, oh, but look, there's a law now requiring a certain number of parliament to be women, you know, requiring women policemen, requiring, you know, schools to be available for women and all this stuff. But what that kind of misses, it's a very top-down approach. And what it misses is that the people on the ground don't respect those laws. And a lot of times they don't know about them. And they're not being enforced. They're not, you know, you can't, you know, like you say, you can't change these deeply ingrained traditions and beliefs. You can't change them from the top down. An interesting thing that I saw in Asia was that things, and obviously totally different set of beliefs and degree of sort of harm being done, but you know, with women in many parts of Asia, with economic development, they were getting more freedom. They were, you know, they didn't have to get married. They could work. They could, and a lot of it was really kind of funny. This was like late 90s. In a lot of the Southeast Asian countries, there was this sort of problem where women just didn't want to get married. And, you know, people were talking about, oh, low birth rates, and, you know, these young women don't want to get married, and what are the men going to do, and all this stuff. But they were more interested, you know, for them, it was better to work for a while and to have some independence and, you know, financial independence. And so, and that, just having the financial freedom, having the economic freedom that came with development, that came with all these sweatshops that, you know, everyone so loathes, really helped a lot of women to have the freedom to make that choice. So I think economic development is part of the story. You know, I don't claim that's going to change, you know, something so deeply ingrained, but I think it definitely helps. That's a piece of the story.
All right, everybody, that's Brittany Schaefer. Check her out at lourockwell.com. And what's your website one more time?
www.brittigne.com.
All right, thank you very much for your time on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Again, everybody, the article is Saving Women and Preventing Genocide, the real reason we're in Afghanistan now.